I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to the On-Call Room,
a Grey's Anatomy podcast.
I'm Abby.
I'm Bree, and it's a beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day to podcast. Wait, you should have kept going. We were on it.
I stopped. We are, again, recording separately, and so that part gets very confusing, and we didn't decide who was saying it this time, so.
What does it sound like when you listen back? Do we just sound dumb?
I think we sound dumb regardless of that.
I think so too.
In like an overarching theme of like, we kind of sound dumb a lot of the time. So
I feel like if someone looked at me right now, they'd also be like, what's happening? I have on these slippers that, our mutual friend Reva gave me for Christmas, where you microwave them and then you wear them on your feet and they look like, monster feet. Like they're just like,
I think
they're like a one-size-fits-all slipper. Yeah, they're huge.
And you have such tiny feet.
Yeah, they're so warm, though. I like them so that they're practically burning my skin off. That's, like, the perfect temperature for me.
That sounds nice. Except, like, that reminds me of, like, when you go, I saw this funny meme where, like, you, like, having social anxiety. And it's like, I'm that type of person. When I go and get a pedicure, like, I'd rather my legs burn off when they put the hot towels on than say, that's a little too warm.
Like, yeah, Heather McMahon talked about that on her podcast this week, too, about how when she has it, it's always so hot. And she's like, too hot. And they're like, no, you'll get used to it. And then that her bones turn into mozzarella sticks, like, just melting.
Yeah. Or, like, when you put your feet in the water and it's just like, oh, that's too hot. And they, like, slightly turn on the cold.
It's never too hot for me. Never too hot for me.
Well, there you go. There you have it, listeners. It's never too hot for Abby. This is a Grey's Anatomy podcast. Welcome, everyone.
We deep dive all episodes of Grey's. We are currently in season 13, episode 19 and 20. Making our way. We're almost to the end of season 13.
Yeah. If you want to support the podcast, you can become a patron at patreon.com/theoncallroom. You can be an intern, resident, or attending. Last week, we had a Zoom meeting for $10 attendings, which was great. This week, a bonus episode came out. That's for $5 and $10 patrons. So there's a lot of really cool things that you get. You can be in the Facebook group. You can leave messages on our voicemail, which people haven't done in a while, but you're more than welcome to. And you can also get the episode a day early. And when we call time of death, we keep recording for like 5 to 10 minutes about a certain topic. That's our post-op discussion, and that is available to $10 patrons. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Bailey and Richard and their relationship and how they've kind of worked to make amends through all the shit they've gone through this season.
Yeah, so it's fun. It's a fun time. It's like sometimes things get weird in post-op, but we can never predict it. So as we speak, we have no idea how it will go.
Yes. I mean, that is, that's the plan topic, but who knows where it will go from there. So.
Exactly. We are supposed to get a really, just because as always, also you can follow us on Instagram at the On Call Room Pod. Forgot to mention that. And I feel like just to talk about our normal lives, the boringness of whatever, we were supposed to get a really big snowstorm this week, which I'm hoping it's one of those things where like they say it's big and then it's not. because I don't feel like driving in it. But, you know, always exciting when the news is talking about a snowstorm.
Well, yeah, but I was a little worried because, like I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I have a minor surgery coming up, and it's actually yes. this Thursday. And everyone's like, there's a big storm on Thursday, a big storm. And I'm like, am I going to be able to make it to my surgery? which, speaking of that, I had to get a COVID test today for, like, preparing for surgery.
Oh, you did? I'm so proud of you.
I have to. But, like, God, okay, so I had to get a PCR, which I haven't gotten a PCR since, like, the beginning of COVID. Like, it's been a very long time.
So you're just doing the take-home ones normally.
Or, like, the rapid at Walgreens or something. Like, I haven't had this, the, like, way
in the brain.
So I've been so anxious for like weeks. It's really funny because I'm like, yeah, I'm fine going under the knife, but like, I don't want to get like a Q-tip shoved up my nose. Like, I can't do it. So I've been so anxious about it all day. And then I woke up this morning and my left nostril was running like crazy. Like, I'm not congested. I don't feel sick, but like, I feel like, I think it's like allergies, but to what? It's winter. But like, I like feel like I have to sneeze. And of course, that's the nostril they went up because it's like at the, it was like a drive through one at Spectrum. Anyway, it was all fine, but I think I did it right because I was so anxious. It wasn't as bad as I thought. Like, had I been like, it's not going to be a big deal, I think I would have been like, that was awful. But because I worked it up so much in my brain, I was like, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. But what's interesting, okay, I don't know if anyone needs to know this, but I'm gonna talk about it. So this morning I go on Instagram and there was a New York Times story on Instagram. I don't know if you saw this, Abby. And they were talking about like, how high up do you have to go for like a COVID test? I was like, wow, this is like exactly what I'm going through.
The algorithm is great today.
Yeah. And it was like this illustration of like, this is like COVID and this is like it coming into your nose and stuff. And it explained a PCR with a drawing. And it was like, you have like the point between like your nasal cavity goes like much farther back. And so it does this drawing of the nasal cavity that kind of like links to your throat. And they showed what the PCR is. And I was like, holy shit, that is not what I thought it was. So think about it. It's actually going directly back, not up into your brain. Like, it's going
right.
And so, like, I always thought, like, oh, it goes up into, like, in between your eyes. But really, it's going, like, directly back. And it's not even, like, because everyone's like, it's a brain tickle. But it's, like, it's actually, like, sensitive skin like, in the
like
nasal cavity. It's, yeah. But, okay, so with Omicron, whatever, I don't know what I'm saying. Like, people have been talking about how, like, potentially it might be better to test like a throat swab or whatever. Okay, hear me out. I feel like back when all of this started, like when they were doing PCRs, they were going more like straight back and up. So it felt like more on your brain. Okay. On the top of the nasal cavity. And now I feel like they're going more down, which is towards your throat. And my sister, who has had many PCRs, has said the last time she got one, she traveled and she was like, it was so weird. This time I felt it in the back of my throat, not in my like brain. And the same thing happened to me. And I think they might be tipping it down. Now, I am not a scientist. This could all be made up. But I literally felt it in the back of my throat instead of my brain this time.
Interesting. I've gotten them every time I go to Honduras and back because you have to. And I feel like I feel them in the same spot, but I'll be going again in February and I'm going to pay attention and see if it feels.
See
like
if
it's
you
in a
feel it
place.
In your
also,
throat. Yeah.
Every time I've had to get one, they've done both sides.
Really? No, this was one. She said, this is the deep one. It's quick, 3 seconds, one nostril. And I was like,
wow.
And I looked at her and I was like, okay, so like I actually recently had, she didn't care. I was like, I actually recently had COVID, but I have to get surgery. So I have to get this done. She's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like pretty much pull your fucking mask down. And I was just like, I was like, I'm so nervous. And she was like, and here we go. Like, it's funny because like, how many times has this woman done this? She's like, I don't care. Like, I'm not going to give you a 1, 2, 3. Like, let's just do this. And actually, afterwards, I was so happy that she did just shove it in my nose because I was, like, so anxious about it. But then, tell me if you get this. Okay, I had a really weird response. Like, afterwards, I was just like, thank you, you know, like, but it wasn't out of pain, but I got very emotional and, like, wanted to start crying. Like, I pulled away. I like, wanted to first say, like, thank you so much for everything you've done through COVID, but I didn't say that. I was just like, thank you very much. And I, like, drove, and I was like, I had to, like, stop my car and, like, not cry because I felt extremely emotional about a PCR.
Like, I think that's because you've been worried about this for, like, over a week.
Yes. Yeah, I think.
So I think to me it was the, like, come down of that emotion.
So not everyone feels that way after a PCR.
I get those whenever I get a pap smear. Also, I always cry.
That's what I thought. Literally, Abby, I didn't want to bring that up on the podcast, but, like, yeah, when that happened, I was like, I feel like Abby feels like when she gets a pap smear, like, just this incredible emotional release of, like, oh no, like, I'm gonna, like.
I think it's that release of stress or something, or I don't know. It's like also an invasion.
Yeah, it's like very invasive. So
yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I've never had to have the test that, I mean, I've done the take home ones, but then I've never done the one where they just, like, only go in your like nose. Essentially, I have only ever had the ones that go in, like, back into my skull, and they've always done both sides. I don't know what my luck is, but I've just, like, always both sides, which honestly I kind of prefer because, like, otherwise one burns and the other one's normal. Like, I'd rather just be evened out.
Oh, I get that. Yeah. When I took that trip out west, I came back and I did a test through CVS. And I don't even know if they do these ones anymore, because now I feel like they're mostly, I feel like they're mostly rapid I think this one was a PCR, but I don't know if you should. Like,
did they give you a pap smear?
No, I feel like you shouldn't. And, like, I read in this article, like, you shouldn't administer a PCR yourself if you don't know what you're doing. But I remember this one, they're like, you had to put your finger on, like, an indent in the, like, swab. Oh, yeah. And they were like, you need to keep pushing until your your fingers hit your nostril. And I remember I, like, got halfway and they were like, more, and I was like, it's not going any further. Like,
I'd rather have them just fucking do it. I'm not gonna do that to myself.
It took, like, a same time I had to do one like that at the airport. And it was like, I would rather them just shove it up my brain for 3 seconds than me take 30 seconds to slowly put this thing up my nose. Like, it's just,
God, that's funny.
God, you know, like, it's going to be so wild in, like, 30 years. Hopefully we're not in a pandemic again in 30 years, but we, like, look back on this and be like, yeah, man, we, like, used to go to these weird warehouse drive-thrus and people in full PPE would just come out and swab your brain. Like, it was wild. Yeah. It will be.
It's such a time. Also, this is, like, the last thing I feel like about COVID that I'll say is just, like, I was listening to The Daily today, and
oh, I was too.
Sweet poor Dr. Fauci, who is so afraid of being taken out of context this point. I feel like that man needs therapy from PTSD of just, like, the past 2 years. I don't know if you listened to it or if anybody listened to The Daily, but I mean, I appreciated him, like, trying to make sure that, like, what was said was what he meant. But, like, every sentence he was like, I need to correct. I need this. And he was like, you don't know how the media might take this.
I know.
I felt like someone needed to grab him and be like, Dr. Fauci, like, you need to go rest for 2 years.
It's time. He needs to be like put, like not, I was about to say put out to pasture. I don't mean that in
something
that way.
Something like that though, but like a good version of that.
Like he needs to just go on retreat because like literally Michael, retreat. Like Michael Barbaro would be like, so anyway, like, yeah, so maybe in the next couple months, like we might see like a new normal. And he was like, now I need to say it could be a few months. It could not be a few months. Just every single thing was like,
there was not a real answer to anything because he's so, he like is like, he can't give one.
No. So
it made me laugh thinking sometimes how when we podcast and we're like, okay, like trying to be so careful to make sure that we aren't like, I always want to be my best and not offend people. But sometimes I think that I'm also just not even saying anything.
Yeah, like so afraid to have an opinion on anything because like yes. not to offend or whatever. And like, totally, I agree.
Yeah.
And also like all of this, I'm about to do it right now. I was about to say like the pandemic is still a really big deal. And like, I'm not laughing at COVID. Like I want to make sure.
Brie laughs at COVID.
I'm like, I just want people to know that like, I know that like, tests and stuff are like a big deal and stuff. I'm just like talking about my own personal experience with having a really runny nostril today and being very anxious to get a test. So like, anyway,
I love this for you.
I mean, I'm happy it's over. I did feel after I felt like crying and having a breakdown, I felt like, wow, I'm on top of the world. Like, you know, when you like get through or like you take that exam or you like
yes.
finish that presentation that you've just been so worried about. And you're like, I don't even fucking care what the results are because I did it.
I did it. I love so. That you're like, oh, maybe you are worried about what you have to do. But like that, I like that this was the hard part for you. So I'm glad that that's over for you.
Oh, yeah. It's not about like literally going under anesthesia and recovering. It's about a COVID test. That was what. But I also feel like, I feel like that's also the human condition is like, I don't want to worry about the surgery. So I found something else to get very anxious yes. about. And then now the new thing is like, well, what if there's a snowstorm? Like instead of like the surgery, it's like, well, what if I'm having surgery while snow is coming down in Michigan? Like, heaven forbid. But it will all be
so
okay.
We are so close though. We are so close to like, to me, February is definitely still horrible winter. But, like, March is, like, still winter, but you know it's the last month.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get some cold days in April, but the sun's out. You got those April showers. Flowers are starting to come out.
It's not going
to
be, like, negative in the April. Although, has it even been negative? I don't think it has. Knock on wood.
No, it's been, like, 3 degrees. But I don't think... Okay. I think there was, like, one morning it was, like, -2. And I was like, fuck this. Yeah. Fuck this.
Fuck this and fuck this.
Yeah.
Well,
should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it. We only watched 2 episodes today or this week, listeners. We are watching season 13, episode 19 and 20.
I love how you said we are watching currently.
Yeah, we're watching it as we speak. Brie was going to watch 100 because she didn't know what we were doing. I'm glad I texted you.
I know. I probably had like 15 on the notes. Like, I don't know. We're watching the next 8. Cool. There's not even 8 in season 13. Let's just go to 14.
The 2 episodes are What's Inside and In the Air Tonight. And I feel like for the first time, I can name both of those songs.
I can feel it coming in yep. the air.
Is
I don't know
Phil
what
Collins?
What's... Yeah, well, it's Genesis, I think, but yeah, Phil okay. Collins.
And then What's Inside is from the musical Waitress.
Oh.
It's the opening song. What's Inside? Wow, that was off key, but you get it.
I got it. Do you want me to go first?
Sure, go for it.
Okay, the monologue. Curiosity
okay,
killed.
Go for it because I got to turn up my headphone volume. So you just read. I'll listen.
You know what? I'm just going to go. So curiosity killed the cat. It also killed a lot of ancient Greeks when Pandora had to open the box full of death and pestilence and stuff. Why do we have to know what's behind door number 3, even when we're pretty sure it will be bad for us? Put yourself in Pandora's shoes. She's given a gift, a wondrous box filled with things she never even knew existed. Of course she opened it, wouldn't you? Meredith Grey.
Turbulence. It means anything from a few little bumps to a catastrophic weather system that could knock your flying tin can right out of the air, aka us this week. In surgery, we call it a complication. We've hit a snag, a bump in the road, turbulence. So, you know, you better buckle up. One of the most unpredictable things about encountering turbulence is its aftermath. Everything's been shaken up, undone, turned on its head. So, if you have the choice to avoid the plane crash, do you take it? Do you play it safe? Or do you get on board and take your chances? Meredith Gray.
Shotgun workup.
I'll do it. I haven't done it in a while.
Oh, okay.
I don't like when it says this, but Jenna, pregnancy. I feel like that shouldn't be like a...
Yeah, I agree.
Anyways, Jenna and Leo's baby, intrapericardial teratoma. Isaac Cross, abdominal tuberculosis. Lance, pulmonary hypertension. Max, skull fracture, epidural bleed, seizure. Candace, broken wrist. Diego, forehead laceration. Nathan Riggs, hand laceration. And Ingrid, shoulder laceration. Lots of lacerations.
Yeah. All right, we don't have too many rounds tonight. The first one we have is Isaac Cross comes into the ER complaining of abdominal pain. Isaac, by the way, is a intern. Stephanie has to treat him and is annoyed that she has to waste her day with him when she thinks he has internitis, which she describes as being a hypochondriac during your intern year. During a scan, her and DeLuca find out that he actually has diverticulitis, which makes her even more mad now that she has to live in a world where Cross was right, that something was wrong. And it's something boring like this. During surgery with DeLuca and Kepner, they realize that he actually has abdominal tuberculosis, which I didn't know existed.
It was gross looking.
Which is contagious. The OR and Cross have to go into quarantine until it can be proven safe again. Stephanie talks to Richard later in the day and is upset with herself that yet again she let herself and her ego come between someone's care. She says that she is just as bad as the doctors who treated her as a child. She ends up gowning up and sitting by Cross while he is in quarantine.
Then we have Maggie visiting her mother's grave with Amelia and Meredith, and she ends up going back to work that same day. She appears to be doing well, and when she hears of Riggs in Arizona doing a neonatal operation on a heart tumor on a baby, she steals the case because it sounds exciting and big. Everyone, including Owen, who knows the family, doubts her. They even try to get the parents to choose to have Riggs back on the case. However, Maggie stands her ground and convinces them that she is well enough to do the surgery and that she is the best. Wow, I ate Culver's before this, and it is, I'm having a hard time. Before the surgery even starts, there are many people watching in the gallery, and Riggs is also there on standby. Arizona asks Maggie if she is sure about this, and she says that she is. The surgery goes well until the very end when the baby's heart rate starts increasing. It appears that Maggie is freezing in action, but she is actually just giving the baby a minute for the heart to regulate. She says, "My plan is to give her a minute. Her heart just needs to learn how to beat without the extra load. She just needs some time to adjust." A perfect metaphor for how she is doing after the loss of her mother. After surgery, she has a minor breakdown telling Jackson that she is not okay, but she is capable of doing her job, and she accuses him of not doing the same for her mother. Later that night, after dancing it out with Amelia and Meredith, Jackson finds her outside and brings to her all of Diane's medical records. It turns out that Diane knew she was sicker than she claimed to be and didn't want to know about it. She didn't go to Jackson because he was the best, but instead because he was like family to Maggie. She also left him with a bunch of photos of travels that she took by herself once she knew she was sick. He shares them with Maggie.
Then we have, after Maggie's successful surgery, Meredith says that she and Riggs can finally have their dinner date. Of course, right before it, Maggie shows up crying and she has to kick Riggs out of the house saying, "I have many people to take care of and you are not one of them." Meredith and Nathan end up unknowingly on the same plane together headed to a conference. They end up sitting next to each other as well, and as soon as the plane takes off, they have sex in the bathroom. After that, major turbulence happens. after the major turbulence in the bathroom. And many people on the plane are injured, not limited to a laceration on a boy's head, a broken wrist from the flight attendant, and a man named Max with a brain bleed, as well as someone with pulmonary hypertension who ends up having a heart attack. Together, the flight attendant, a dental hygienist, no, he was a dental dental. He was a dentist. He wasn't
a dentist.
Yeah.
I forgot that's a different thing.
Yeah.
My bad.
And other passengers worked together. He was a pediatric dentist. That's what he was.
Yes.
Worked together with Meredith and Riggs to do their best to keep everyone together until they can emergency land. Throughout the episode, Riggs accuses Meredith of being scared and making excuses for them not to be together. We see a lot of flashbacks of Meredith and Derek and other traumatic moments in Mare's life. At the end of the episode, Riggs encourages Meredith to live her life and let go of the past. She has a moment where she sees all of those past moments of her and Derek's life together, and then she agrees to go to the hotel with him.
And then we're going to talk about Richard and Bailey in post-op. So...
Okay, cool. First notes.
Mine is Diane wanted to be buried close to Maggie. That's so tragic. I just thought that was, I mean, it's like beautiful, but it's also like sad. And then I just have the quote that says, maybe this is what grief looks like when you've lived a full happy life.
Yeah,
like,
I love
Meredith
that.
Meredith and Amelia are talking about like, wow, is this what grief looks like when you're normal?
Yeah, I said, we start at the cemetery. Maggie's at her mom's grave. And Amelia thinks it's weird that Maggie's mom was buried here. And then the next line I have is Mare and Amelia. And I said, ha, because they say to each other, we're more alike than we realize. And I was going to say they are very alike. So because they were like talking about their things and then they realized like, oh, we have a lot of like similar shit. So,
yeah, they're very dark and twisty.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what do you want to talk about first?
Well, I was just going to say, I also like that they assume that like, oh, this is normal grief. Like, this is what it is when like, I think the whole point of this episode also is that like grief is different it changes and it ebbs and flows. And like, so it's like interesting that it like starts out being like that. I guess we can talk about the Maggie thing since we started there.
Yeah. So everyone's like really worried about her. There's this like big surgery that shows up with it's Owen's friends. So that's like a whole other side story. I will say one note about this. Should Owen be friends with his patients? I don't think that's ethically okay. Like they like talk about like they came to the wedding. They went to each other's weddings. And I know it was at like the VA. But also I'm like, I don't.
Yeah, he shouldn't be treating them or the one giving them the options. Yeah.
Yeah,
no,
totally.
I totally agree. It is nice sometimes when they bring in these people, they're like, oh, someone from the outside world. But like, it just, they didn't seem like they'd be friends with Owen.
No. No, and I kind of thought they were bad actors. So it just like.
Maybe that was it.
I literally have a note, two notes later. Why does this acting suck with this weird couple that Owen. Like,
yeah, and, like, do you remember that? Do you remember the couples of like early Grays where like they have chemistry? Like, I'm thinking of the blonde pregnant woman that
yes.
treats.
Oh, like, yes.
I mean, I know she's in a bunch of episodes, so that makes it different. But I just was like, I literally don't care about this story, like these people.
Yeah. But like, Pierce comes back to work and pretty much steals the surgery on this baby. This woman's pregnant and steals the surgery from Riggs. And Riggs is kind of like, well, there's nothing I can do. Like, she's my boss. She kind of like asks him to give it to her. And she's like, you know what? No, I'm taking it. I'm taking it from you. And Owen is like not happy about it. I understand like these are his friends and everyone's really worried about her. But then there was like, it was just like very dramatic when he like comes outside of the room and screams at Arizona that Riggs is the better choice. And then the husband is standing behind him. I'm like, this would not like happen in a hospital. I hope. Like that seems just really dramatic. I don't know.
Yeah. And also, it's interesting too, just like in talking about Maggie, like if her mom hadn't just died and she'd stolen the surgery, there would be no question. Like it's just like something that doctors do. And also, I think like it is her first day back. I don't know. I was very torn with like, I didn't know if I was supposed to agree with the doctors that I should be worried about this, but I like wasn't because I feel yet again that like Maggie. Not that she has her shit together, but that she wasn't taking the surgery like to spite something. You know what I mean? Like she was just taking it because it's a badass surgery. I didn't feel like she was doing it to like cover up her grief, you know?
Yeah, I don't know that I felt like she was doing it because it was a badass surgery. Like, part of that, yes, I agree with. But I think it was more like I have to do my job today. Like, and I have to do it well because, like, that's the only option. And so I can't, like, because I think she is, like, obviously we see and we'll get into it. Like, she is still grieving and we dive deep into that. But I think, like, her thing is, like, if I'm going to be at work, like, I need to be working. This is my job. And so I can't just be on, like, you know, whatever, like fucking boards or whatever we call them, clipboards or whatever.
Clipboards. She can't just do clipboards all day.
She can't do it. You know, she needs to, like, this is something that she's like, okay, I can, like, sink my teeth into and I can, like, focus my energy into. I don't know that it was necessarily about, like, wow, this is really badass and I want to do a badass surgery. I mean, you could be right, though.
I agree with what you're saying. I think she was doing it to keep her mind busy, but I also don't think she was, like, taking on a risk because of, you know what I mean? Like, I think it was what you said. I think it's like she needed to be doing something that felt like working and felt like something different than what she's probably been doing for the last, like, however long she took off.
Probably felt like normalcy, you know, like getting back to her normal life of, like, doing badass surgeries.
Yes. And I did appreciate, too, like, the way she talked to those
patients, to
the, like, parents. Yeah. Because I do think, like, I think one of the things I do like about Maggie is she's, like, confident in her, what she does. And she knows she's the best, which kind of reminds me of Christina, which they were very, very different people. But, like, I like seeing that. And so I was glad when the mom, like, chose her over whatever, especially when they made the point that, like, oh, Owen's only doing this because of personal reasons. Like, it has nothing to do with surgical reasons. And so I thought that was good. I was also glad in this episode that it kind of, like, jumped to the surgery happening, like, right away. It wasn't, like, in the end of the episode. And I did also like that Arizona, like, looks her in the eye before it and is like, hey, like, are you ready for this? Like, it's great if you are, just tell me. Because I think Arizona always has her patients in mind, like, so much better than a lot of other people.
And so I don't think, like, Arizona was trying to, like, everyone else is kind of, like, doing, like, either weirdly coddling Maggie or, like, you know, like, not handling her coming back to work very well. But I think Arizona did it in a way of, like, I'm not trying to be, like, rude to you. I legitimately need to know, like, we can't go back after this. So, like, are we going to move forward? I agree with you. I think it was more about having the patient in mind than, like, whereas, like, when Amelia and Meredith talk to her, I don't even know that they have the patient in mind. It's just like,
no, like, not at all.
Just like, what are you doing, Maggie? And they instill a lot of doubt in Maggie. Like, they're not very supportive.
I know. I love that she called them out on that and was like, excuse me, this is where you hype me up. Like, you're not doing that.
Like, Maggie's kind of like, I had no doubt that I could do this surgery all day until you two stood in front of me right before surgery. And now I'm like, I don't know that I can do this.
Yes.
I also like that when she, like, fought, going back to what you said about, like, how she kind of comes into the patients or the mother and the father and is like, hey, like, here are all the reasons, whatever. I do like that Owen doesn't push back. Like, they make the choice and he, like, kind of owns up to, like, yeah, like, I am worried. And they're like, okay, well, we want you then, you know, to Dr. Pierce. And I like that Owen doesn't, like, make... like, doesn't try and go above her again. He's like, okay, well, she came in.
I love when we like when Owen does the bare minimum.
Oh, right. I know. Isn't that the worst? God damn it. You're absolutely right about
that. We're like, great job, Owen.
Yeah, for not pushing back on that one thing. But you were an asshole before, but, like, good job not being an asshole for 5 seconds in the episode.
I also feel like when we've been talking about this a lot lately, but, like, this to me, this, like, this is what we miss in current grays is, like, the patient-doctor metaphors. So, like, you know, like, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be jumping. I'm jumping to the actual surgery.
Yeah, no, and that's, like, fine.
And, how Arizona says, like, we are taking this baby out of its comfy place. Like, we are removing it into the scary world. Like, removing, ripping off the Band-Aid, like, whatever. And then also that, like, you know, the baby's heart rate starts to freak out and it looks like she's like freezing and not knowing what to do. But like in reality, she's giving the baby a minute because the baby needs to adjust to this new, to not like, you know, pumping with that tumor on anymore, AKA like to not having to live that life that it was before. And I feel like it's just like such a good metaphor for Maggie right now that like she is adjusting and like she's allowed to adjust and it might take time. Like something was just ripped away from her. And I feel like I miss that in Current Grace. Like the doctor,
I agree. Good. Like when like the storylines combine and there is that metaphor, yes. I totally agree with you. I mean, the line, her heart just needs to learn how to beat without that extra load. She needs a little time to adjust. Oh, God. It's just like, it's so sad. Like, her mother's not there anymore. Yeah. I'm going to back it up 1 second.
Yeah, please.
We can go back to the surgery. There, it was just one line that I thought was like, it wasn't like funny. The topic is not funny, but like, all the doctors are kind of like talking like, is Maggie okay? Blah, blah, blah. And Meredith is trying to kind of defend her. And Mare says that she operated through a miscarriage. Like, so she's fine. And Jackson is like, that's not normal. And everyone's kind of like, and then Meredith is like, okay. And that's how she agrees to go talk to Maggie and check on her. Like, I love that when Meredith's shit gets checked. Like, she's like, I did this. Like, I'm fine. And then there are those people who are like, Meredith, that's not actually okay.
Like you're not, you also weren't fine.
Yeah. Like, that's not something to be like,
the standard. That should be the standard.
Yeah. So like, maybe we should check on Maggie, but, I did like when I was watching it, I don't quite remember like the baby is bradycardic or whatever. And, I have a note like, oh my God, Dr. Pierce is not okay. Like what's going on? And she says there's nothing that needs to be done, which I thought was good, like mysterious writing too.
Yeah, it was great. Cause I'm sure there was a commercial break.
Oh yeah. And you're thinking like, oh my God, she is like putting her trauma of her mom on this baby of like, there's nothing left. Like it's PTSD. Like the patient's just gonna die because we can't do anything else.
Right.
And then it ends up being this other thing. What I do love about all of this is that everyone's up in the gallery and they're looking at Riggs, like, get down there. And he says, no. Like, Riggs trusts. I think Riggs is the only one who really trusts Maggie and is like, you know, no, I'm not going to move. And he doesn't. He doesn't rush down there. He gives her the space. And she ends up like, you know, everything ends up being fine with the patient. So.
Yeah, I wondered, I didn't know like if that was supposed to be like mysterious writing or if that's like very common of like, you know, like letting it like rest, like, and just like taking a second. But I thought it was great. I thought it was great. Kept me on my toes.
Yeah, totally.
It's interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just saying it's interesting that like immediately following that, are we talking about what Maggie's reaction then to like Jackson?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I think, does Jackson say something like, you seem to be doing well or whatever? Like, and I love the distinction of, she says like right away, she goes, I am not doing well. She said, I am doing my job. She said, I'm doing my job while everyone is staring and telling me I am not up for it. I feel like that's important, especially just like in life, is like people might still be like doing their things and getting work done and like checking all of the check marks and whatever, but like that does not mean that they're not okay. And I love that like Maggie is able to do her job and not be okay at the same time and recognize that.
Yeah, I think that is a really important understanding of what grief is. And you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier in this episode, talking about grief, that like how it manifests different for different people and how it like ebbs and flows and how, like, I think what Maggie is saying is like, it's constant. It's consistent. It is.
Yeah.
It is underlying, but like, I have to keep moving forward. But that doesn't mean that she's not like dying inside.
Right. Right.
Oops. I just dropped my glasses. But like, I think, I think it's really interesting that like everyone wants her to either be like okay or not okay. Like she's not allowed to be like gray and mushy and in the middle. Like I can still do my job and get my shit done, but I also can come home from work and fall apart.
Exactly. And then she does. Well, she accuses Jackson that she did her job. How come he couldn't do his, which is not quite a fair judgment, but whatever, she's feeling things. And then we see her arrive at Meredith's and she's crying. And I love this scene a lot because I think like if we hadn't ever seen that they'd like grieved together and like ate the lasagna in silence and all of that, like maybe I would have felt like, come on, Mare, let her be sad for a minute. But I feel like this episode is like showing us that they've done that already. Like they've cried, they've sat, they've remembered. And at this point, like there's just that, and it's like they're just sitting in silent together. And like Amelia has her head on Maggie's and Meredith's just like, we can't do this anymore. Like we're either going to cry or we're going to dance it out. And I do think that like, obviously that's not always the right move if someone's grieving, but like, I do think like getting into your body for a second and just like, I don't know. Like, I feel like that was the perfect move to have them dance it out.
Yeah, I loved it. I also loved, like, right before that, such good acting. So when Maggie's crying and she says, I want my mom. Like, I don't know what to do now. What do I do? And that is, like, I think that's, like, a beautiful depiction of losing someone so close to you. Like, who would Maggie go to if she was feeling what she's feeling? Probably her mom.
She'd go to her mom.
And her mom's not there. So like, I just want my mom to be there for me grieving about my mom. Like that's why grief is so weird. Like I need that person who's going to like support me and love me and help me get through this, but they're the one that's not there. So I thought that was really beautiful too. And also, like, I thought it was beautiful for, like, Meredith to see. Like, Meredith isn't, like, ever been like, I want my mom, you know? Like, and I love, like, what you said that, like, okay, we've done this. So, like, I'm going to give you an option. Like, you can cry. We can definitely cry it out or we can dance it out, but we're not just going to sit in silence and, like, slump tonight.
And yeah, I think she says it's this or cry. Like she does give her the choice, I suppose, of like, if you want to cry, we can do that, but let's try something else.
Yeah. And I love how Maggie dances like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That feeling of like, and I have been there where it's like you said, I think there is so much to be said about like getting in touch with your body and just like letting your emotions like move through it. And that is like,
yeah, she's kind of like punching. She's like got an angry dance, which I like.
Yeah. I thought it was a really beautiful scene. And I love too that like Amelia just joins right in, like doesn't really question it. Yep. Like they all just like do it. And I thought it was really, really sweet.
It's also the first time they've danced it out since I think the last
season
time,
finale, that
finale,
one?
Finale, right, at that wedding, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that Catherine and Richard's wedding?
Yeah, after Derek's death. Was that 11?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's good to see them do that yet again. I'm trying to think if I have anything. I think the only thing I have just about that storyline really fast, and then we'll talk about Stephanie, is my only note about Owen. I don't know why I know Jenna, that's the woman's name, like invited Owen to feel the baby, but I wrote Owen putting his hands on Jenna's belly is weird. And then I said him looking back at what he won't ever have. He leaves that room like looking very sad.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're like a family and blah. And also, like, we don't have to talk about this long, but like Amelia kind of said that she never went and visited Jenna and Leo. And she said, they're your friends, Owen, from before.
Yeah. Like,
which is also like assuming there's a before and after. Like, they're in the after now.
Right. Exactly. I think is like a big gut punch of like, oh, this is ending. So,
exactly.
Okay. Stephanie?
Yeah.
I mean, Cross really
annoying.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have much to say about this except for like, this is another example. I like knowing now that Stephanie leaves, I think you and I have tried really hard to like pay attention to her storyline. And there actually are like many things as like as we are talking about in the podcast, that are leading to her choice
yes.
of like leaving surgery and leaving this career. Where before, when I watched that episode for the first time, I was like, what the fuck is what? Like all of a sudden she's just gonna leave.
Yeah, it makes way more sense now.
Yeah. And like, I remember watching like the fire episode, which is coming up, but I was like, I remember being like, well, yeah, she went through like a crazy trauma in this last like episode, but like it doesn't make sense, her like monologue about it. But like there are now two episodes where she has specifically yep. discussed like, why do we even do it? Like, I don't know that I'm into this, like, like really questioning. And so even just having those two, I'm like, okay, the end of her character makes more sense now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like the parallel she made too, to like, I didn't do his care because I like, you know, my ego, whatever. And that she says like, I'm just as bad as the doctors that treated me as a child, which like, yeah. I don't think she is. But the fact that she feels that way, like, why would you want to continue on when the hurt that they did to her in that time, like was so traumatic to her. And if she's feeling more like that, that would be hard. I mean, she tries to rectify it by like sitting by him, you can see. And like, but she just seems kind of like jaded by the career. Like it's just hardened her and her heart is not really in it anymore.
Yeah, totally.
So also tubercular, we don't need to talk about it, but there's too many bowels for me to see on television.
They looked like little wormies in there. It was really gross.
I'd be more like DeLuca and her when they're like, fuck, I feel gross. I feel like whatever, like Kepner's like chill. And I would be like, nope. Especially because it's someone you know. For some reason to me, that makes it gross. Like,
yeah. I do feel like because Kepner went overseas with the army, you know, like yes, I feel yeah. like she has like, she's just better at it, you know, and she is also has more training and she's like in trauma surgery and stuff. Right. But like, I would like to be a Kepner, but I'm absolutely a DeLuca and Edwards.
Kind of a
like,
baby about it all.
Yeah. Like I would not be a Kepner. I would be like, get me the fuck out of here. This is awful.
And then again, I'd be more grossed out that it was someone I knew. I don't know why. I don't even really understand what TV is, but the way what I saw was like, looked like gross food on bowels, like got yeah. stuck to them. And I was just like, I don't want this. And DeLuca's literally like, ew. Like, just, I love that he just needed to check out. Also, I feel like they had to do the storyline to explain where that guy's been. He was in India? What? Like, I don't know. It was weird.
Also, I thought it was funny when he was coming up from anesthesia and it's just like, you are beautiful and you are sexy to like Stephanie. I thought that was funny. Like,
I wish I could see you after you get out of anesthesia.
I have said some embarrassing things out of anesthesia before.
I think you should, if you're alone in a room, can you try to remember to film yourself?
Like, but I probably won't like have my phone.
But what if they give it? If they give it to you, I want you to just to put on a video selfie mode and just talk.
Okay, I will do it for you.
Or send me a voice memo.
Yeah, afterwards, my therapist said something yeah. about how like, oh, there's like I heard that like there's this anesthesia now where you like wake up pretty much immediately, and I was like, I don't want that. Like I
no,
want that.
Not at all.
No, I was like, I want the one where you're like really loopy for a while. What? No, I don't want to like be done with surgery and 5 minutes later be awake. No, let me sleep. Let me rest a minute. God damn it. Yeah. Like, but I'll let you know.
The last time I was under anesthesia was, and I just remember it's whatever. I did like a breast augmentation, and I just remember waking up. And I was in and I looked at the clock and the clock was wrong, but it like basically showed that no time had passed from when I went into surgery. And I remember I started crying and I was like, they couldn't do it. Could they? And they were like, what? And I was like, they couldn't do the surgery. And the lady was so confused. She's like, no, they definitely did surgery. And I was like, they didn't. And like, and then I remember like raising a hand slowly and pointing to the clock. And she was like, oh, that clock's wrong. I was like, well, fucking get it fixed. It's confusing.
That's funny.
So, I don't have anything to talk about other than the rig stuff, which will lead into what we talk about in the next one.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go.
Let's maybe just start it by saying that like Arizona and Riggs are chatting. He sees her and Minnick pull up and he like gives her an out by saying like, oh, you carpooled together. And then she ends up opening up to him. I think she just really wants someone to be honest with because it's been this like secret. And she tells him, you know, they didn't just carpool, but he's like, yeah, I know. And so then it kind of like opens up this conversation to her finding out that he has a date with someone in the hospital. And she's guessing all the people and she guesses Meredith or she guess goes through all of them. And I guess his face twitches when she says Gray, which leads her to like, kind of be like, oh my gosh, wow. She's like, Meredith Gray, wow, blah, blah, blah. And she says a bunch of things. The only part I got quoted was she says, that girl's heart beat for Derek Shepherd. It never occurred to me that she would be with anyone else, which like terrifies Riggs.
Spooks him. That's what she says. Oh no, I spooked you. But yeah, I mean, she like really talks up their love story and—
yeah. It felt like she was talking to us as fans. Like that's how us fans felt. You know what I mean? Like it never occurred to us. Like that was it. That was epic. That was the love story. I feel like that's how, especially at that time, how we're thinking like, wait, Meredith can be with someone else? No.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. 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 That's a good point. And poor Riggs is like, oh, shit. Oh, fuck. And then what I don't love is like they're kind of becoming friends, but then she very quickly dips out. She's like, don't be spooked. I was JKing. Like, see ya. And just like leaves the, you know, the lounge. I was like, you know, if you were a better friend, you'd probably stick around and like let him respond. But she very quickly like skirted her way out of there. But then they end up in a goddamn plane together.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. I feel like we keep saying this. I don't remember this.
I do remember this episode.
I don't remember. Okay, here's what I know nothing about plane. I don't know anything about turbulence. That was an insane amount of turbulence.
I said there was, wait, where is my, no. oh my God, that person hit the fucking deck, man. Did you see that person like hit the ceiling? And that was insanity. That was just crazy.
And just like, usually I feel like you have a little turbulence for a while, but they had turbulence for like the whole hour of the episode. Like it was absurd. I just truly like don't believe how a storm could last that long.
Especially if you're moving through it. Like,
they wouldn't have taken off.
Like, it would be one thing if you were, like, in one place on the ground that a storm lasted a long time because of how storms move. But think of how fast a plane is moving. Like, you move through the storm clouds. Like, you're, yeah, whatever. Unless it was, like, storm upon storm upon storm upon storm.
Yeah, because I feel like when you fly, it's like, okay, there might be some turbulence. And there is for, like, 30 seconds. And then you've made it through the storm. I just thought this was, okay, like there was part, I loved the Riggs Meredith parts of this episode and like what it all meant and like, which we'll talk about. The actual like trauma they dealt with in the airplane was baloney to me.
Oh yeah, like the guy was on blood thinners and he was a pain in the ass and blah, 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 blah. And then like there was weird flirting things going on or the one character thought that the other character was flirting with them, like the flight attendant and then the dentist. And then there was like just ridiculous things about putting a needle in the brain. I also kind of hated how Meredith like met this guy like at the bathroom. I'm like, people don't fucking talk like this on planes.
No.
People are pissed off. They want to go pee and they want to get back to their plane and get to where they're going. They're not like, who's your guy? Oh, that's your guy on the plane. That does not fucking happen. No one, I have tried to be nice on a flight and no one is ever nice to me. So.
No, and just the needle, the thing with the brain bleed and the needle, I mean, if you are a surgeon, call me out on this. I don't think anyone would do that.
I don't think so either. And there were so many times like, if you move the needle slightly, like he's like gonna die. And there was a thousand like turbulences where she's like not holding it anymore. And it's clearly rattling in this guy's brain. And they're like, we're still okay. It's like, are we?
Yeah.
Are we still okay?
And then, like, Riggs is giving that absurd CPR. Like, And, like, the plane is shaking and his hair is moving. And it's, like, the most intense CPR I've ever seen, which, like, then switched to, and again, we will talk about Meredith and Riggs. I'm just talking about the ridiculousness of this. Then the plane lands and he's like, we're on ground, Meredith. And, like, and the other guy that was helping starts laughing. And, like, they're, like, clapping. And I'm like, there are people dying all around you.
Also, there's, like, there, like when that guy finally hits the deck and is like having a heart attack or whatever, Riggs is like, ask for like erectile dysfunction medicine. It could save his life. Yes. And that lady who comes up and is like, did you say erectile dysfunction medication? And he's like, yes, ma'am. And she like weirdly palms it at him. She's like, well, I have some right here.
She pulls it out of her pocket.
I was like, what is going on in this fucking episode? This is.
Yes. So, like, the things, okay, that's what I hated about it. I mean, I liked the, like, throwbacks to the flight episode and, like, you know, I think it's a
good. Oh, wait, I have one other thing to say that I thought was a little ridiculous. And I like that Meredith is like, no, it's not the same thing. But, like, both of them have been in a plane crash.
Mm-hmm. And then I like that, I was glad, though, that his is, like, not really. You know what I mean? Like,
I know, but still, even that he has done that before, I was just like, oh my God, this is
too
like,
much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I feel like, you know, they clearly needed them to be away. And I also think a lot of the flashbacks are of to moments in Meredith's life when she almost died. There's the drowning one. There was the airplane crash. You know, all these things. And I feel like it proves the point to Riggs that he tries to make to her that, like, it is sad that the loves of our life are probably dead. But, like, we are not. So we need to not be scared. And, like, we need to choose to live and, like, try this thing. Like, I feel like the fact that they made it out of that plane alive, you know, and, like, all these things. Like, because, you know, he's like, that wasn't us. We buckled up. Like, I feel like it proves the point. I just thought it was ridiculous otherwise.
Yeah, I did love the carousel. Anytime that carousel music hits, I feel something. I thought it was like kind of important how Meredith says like that she lost a sister and he's like, I get it now. Like, I get why Maggie is so important. Like, okay. But also too, I felt like kind of the way Meredith was telling it was kind of bad acting. And she's like, I have a baby sister.
I don't know.
It was just like, but there was that flashback right before they hit the ground as the plane is landing. It was like all the saddest flashbacks.
Yes.
It was like, and like you said, it was like all the moments that she almost died or like Derek died or whatever. And then they're like on the ground and it's like this relief. There was one other moment that was like really sad. And it was like carousel music was playing and like they're still on the plane and Meredith and Nathan are arguing. Mm-hmm. And she says, I am married to him.
Yeah, that part got me too.
And I was like, I said like, wow, that's really surprising. Because like she has had sex with him. She has wanted to go on a date with him and stuff. But like we have not heard her say that. And also there was like talk in the beginning of the episode of like, you know why we can't be together. But I don't know that she explicitly ever says that or we as viewers really know why. Like, I know there's the Maggie thing and like, but are we to understand that like the you know why is like, I'm married.
I feel that's a good question. I feel like it might be one of her big reasons, especially because like, then at the end, Riggs, the point he makes to her, she says, I'm making a choice. I'm prioritizing my family and my sister. And then Riggs comes back at her and it's like, no, you're scared of him, of letting him go. And he says, at some point you've got to let him go. And so I feel like she's trying to say like, no, it's Maggie and my family and this. And he's saying like, no, it's that you are afraid of letting Derek go.
Yeah. And then she's like, I don't want to talk about this. And he's like, I don't want to talk about it either. Like, I want to move forward and live my life. Like, great. You don't want to talk about it? Neither do I. So, like, are we going to go and, like, go to a hotel room?
He says, I'm still here or they're talking about, like, move forward with his life. He says, I'm still here and I've still got one and so do you. And it's like an invitation to move forward.
And then in that moment, though, then we have all those really lovely flashbacks with Derek. And I just have like, they were so young. And so it's like this big question of like, do you, I mean, the monologue's going then. And if we come back to the monologue, it's like, so if you have the choice to avoid the plane crash, do you take it? Do you play it safe or do you get on board and take your chances? And so the whole thing is like, she took a chance with Derek and look at what happened. All these beautiful moments, not them dying, not, but like all of their love and like, do you take that chance?
Ooh, such a good tie-in.
Yeah, so like...
Yeah, because in the beginning, it's showing all the scary parts and the horrible parts and the him dying and like... And then
and the loss it's like, of it all. But like at the end, it's like, well, do you take the chance? Because like, look at all the joy that comes from it. And that, all those flashbacks is what makes her say like, fine, let's get a hotel, but I'm not holding your hand. She's still really nervous about it. What breaks my goddamn heart is that he leaves at the end of this season.
I know. Okay, also speaking of him leaving, also in this scene, which is essentially the scene that they decide, I believe, to like move forward and have a relationship, they're surrounded by ambulances and police cars.
Yes,
and
like those thought the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, like that lighting. And that's exactly what it looks like when they end, which... Who knows if that's, I have to think that's on purpose. Don't you think?
I think so. Yeah, I think.
I don't know what it means, but I have to think it's a parallel. It also just makes me wonder if like the way this is written makes me think that like, and I don't know the behind the scenes if the actor that plays Riggs, you know, like ended up having to leave, but like Grace didn't want him to, because to me now any new love interest that she's had, like McWidow or Nick, there's no this part. Like maybe she only had to make this choice once, you know what I mean? Like of moving forward, or DeLuca, I forgot about DeLuca. But like, to me, this felt like it was going to be some sort of end game.
Yeah. I like in rewatching this, I will admit that like, I feel very invested in their relationship. And I think that they, like, I don't even really like Nathan Riggs that much, to be completely honest. I'm not like, wow, he's a super handsome guy. And like, but there is something, the way that they wrote the story about letting go and leaving Derek and entering into something new with someone else, that like, I think they wrote it really well. And they pulled, for our viewership, like pulled in like flashbacks of Derek that really like pulled at your heartstrings. But anything moving forward, like if there, like it feels like if there is anything of Derek, it's maybe mentioned by Meredith.
Right.
But there's no like music, there's no carousel music, there's no flashback, there's no like angst about like, this is really difficult. Like,
which do you think that this is like she only has to do this once. You know what I mean? Like, does she only have to move forward once? And then after that, she's done it. So it's less hard.
I mean, that's a great question. And I think that we should ask that to a widow. Like, does it ever get fucking easier? I don't know. I mean, who does she see on the beach? She sees Derek, you know?
Yeah.
I just think that, I don't even think it's about that. I think it was just better writing, honestly. Like, I think they just did a better job. And it was only two seasons out, so it was closer, you know?
That's true.
But I think there might be something to say about, like, she makes a step forward. But to me, he leaves very soon after. She should be more guarded. You know, like, fuck, I put myself out there again, and then this guy left, you know? So, like,
I wonder, though, if the reason he leaves feels, like, remember she even says, like, if it were Derek, I'd already be gone.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the one forgivable reason.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's, like, the one reason that she understands and does not feel that like he had another choice.
Yeah, she doesn't hold it against him or reflect on her. Like if Derek came back, she would be with Derek.
Right.
So
I'm just looking. This one is directed by Chandra Wilson, which is cool.
Oh, cool.
I was just curious. And it's written by Stacey McKee, so this is before like Krista Vernoff came back.
Okay.
Because there's like that gap, you know? I wonder if I can't remember what season it was. I think it was like season 16 that Krista Vernoff came back. But But yeah, so I agree. I just think, yeah, and I'm choosing to be hopeful in this moment. It's the only thing getting me through today that like in rewatching Grey's, maybe I will find that like there aren't bad seasons that yeah. I think, you know what I mean? Like maybe when we dissect it, we find more that when we're just watching it weekly, we don't notice.
Yeah, I would hope so.
That's me being hopeful.
No, I love it. And I just thought it was... Like, I didn't really, like, honestly care for that episode, but that ending part and all the flashbacks and, like, the tie-in felt, like, pretty smart writing for us as viewers of, like, okay, this is the moment that she's, like, opening her heart to him because yes. of what, by taking that step forward and that chance, you can only really... Like, it's that whole thing about joy. Like, joy is extremely vulnerable. Like, so if you want to feel mm-hmm. that again, you're going to have to put yourself in a very vulnerable place.
Yeah.
So,
I'm glad, though. Is this the season finale when he leaves?
When who leaves?
No. Riggs. Or is it the next one?
No, it's this season at the end.
Oh, fuck. So I only get a few more episodes with this hopeful feeling that like of a relationship that makes sense.
Yeah.
God, that sucks so bad.
It does.
Ugh, I hate it. I hate it. And we're going to have to see that stupid episode with him and Megan running around on the beach.
Yeah, in like California or whatever. Ugh.
I hate it so much. Only to be told that they break up later.
That they break up and that he is dating someone from Virgin River. My God.
So anyways, I feel good. I feel like we really nailed that conversation.
I do too. Should we go into notes and trivia?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's alternate. This episode's title originated from the song What's Inside, originally sung by Sarah Bareilles.
It scored 7.23 million viewers.
It is the 250th voiceover to be narrated by Meredith Grey. This number also includes voiceovers that were shared with other characters.
The episode was produced as the 20th episode, but it aired as the 19th instead.
Nice. This episode is the second time Meredith dances it out since Christina left. The first time was in season 11 finale, You're My Home. Wow, we're good.
We should. Marika Dominicks appears only one line mourning.
That's Minnick.
Ah.
Meredith mentions to Owen, Jackson, and Amelia that she once operated through a miscarriage, referring to death and all his friends. Owen was the patient, having been shot by Gary Clark, while Christina operated on Derek's gunshot wound, and Jackson assisted with Derek's surgery.
This episode title originated from the song In the Air Tonight, originally. Oh, so it was by Phil Collins. It wasn't Genesis. Yeah. Anyone who was yelling at me, sorry about it.
Episode scored 7.19 million viewers.
It was produced as the 19th episode of the season, but was aired as the 20th.
Switched them up. This is the first time since season 8 that Meredith takes on a neurological case.
The episode shares the record of only two main cast members appearing with Who Is He and What Is He to You?
This is the last episode where Rob Korn serves as executive producer. However, since it was filmed early on in the season with the rest of the season-centric episodes, the last episode he worked on chronologically is Civil War.
The episode features numerous flashbacks from Flight as well as flashbacks to various episodes showcasing important moments in Meredith and Derek's relationship.
And the episode features a special opening title card with a dark sky and clouds in the background.
Woo! Yeah. All right, Catherine Avery.
I think we should give it to Meredith because, she danced it out with Maggie and she decided to take a step forward.
Okay, I don't know that she's gotten it this season.
I think we stopped giving it to her for a while.
Yeah, she was kind of like a wreck for a while that we were like, she is not, we were not proud of her.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think she did a good job these episodes. What are you going to rate it?
I'm going to rate it a 7.5 out of 10 because the carousel music, I don't know. Now that we've discussed it, like I liked this. I'm a fan of the Riggs thing. I think it's because it's just super depressing and like, I like shit like that.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to agree because I wasn't bored. And I really actually like the Maggie, like watching her grieve and stuff. Like I didn't mind these episodes. Some of the shit on the plane was very annoying, but the core story of Meredith and Riggs I like. So 7.5.
Yeah, the plane was ridiculous, but I also like Sometimes it's fun to have something new. Like, you're just like, wow, this is a weird fucking episode.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, if you want to hear more, we're going to call Time of Death. And if you're a $10 patron, stick around for post-op. Otherwise, thank you for listening. Thank you for being a patron. Thank you for watching Grey's Anatomy.
Thank you for being a friend.
Exactly. Thank you. Do you want to call
Time of Death?
Okay.
I do. It is 2051.